Now ready.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hi, everyone. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Jamie.
How you doing, baby?
I'm all right.
Hanging in?
I'm hanging in.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll unpack that in much more detail in a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. It's nice to have you here. Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. We're taping this on Tuesday, May 12th. It'll be out May 13th. 13th, that's lucky. That's nice.
Is it?
Things are looking up.
Yeah.
Good. Uh-huh. Hey, welcome new listeners. Welcome new supporters. New listeners first. We have an influx of new people because we're doing our fundraiser to the Misfit Stars community.
So glad you all are here.
Yeah, and it theoretically means that, you know, anyone who's in the Misfit Stars community gets an automatic email when the new podcast episode comes out. So theoretically, we've got some new friends listening to the podcast.
Maybe people who've never listened before.
That could be the case.
Welcome to you.
Welcome so much, y'all. And if that is the case, thank you. Thanks for taking a chance and clicking on our weird little podcast. I'm sure that probably some of you got the message and you're like, wait, what?
Huh?
I thought this was a patron community and now it's a podcast. What have I gotten myself involved
in? It's both.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a global approach to our lives.
Yes.
Misfit Stars is just kind of, at this point, everything to do with me and Shannon together as a unit.
Yes.
So hey, if you're listening to this for the first time, thanks. This will be a shorter than normal episode because we're currently about a third of the way into our sustainability fundraiser. We'll talk about that in a sec, but just suffice to say that typically we have sort of a longer podcast, but because we're doing a live Facebook Live broadcast every freaking evening at 7:30 p.m. West, 10:30 p.m. East, every single day for 23 days, the podcast is getting a bit short shrift.
Because it's a lot of talking.
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot to talk that much.
A lot of energy.
Yeah. So stay tuned in a few weeks for more normal length podcasts on topics, again, that, you know, we find interesting and relevant to the moment.
And maybe want to unpack in more than like 10 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But for now, you're getting the 10-minute ones and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
So... I sound like a punitive mom.
Oh my gosh, totally.
You're going to eat this oatmeal and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
The irony is we have oatmeal for breakfast every day now and totally love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, how we grow.
Uh-huh.
So new supporters, that's a second group of people to thank. And here's the deal. We're doing our sustainability fundraiser right now. As you have probably heard, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, Shannon and I cannot do the thing that we do this year to make almost all of our money, which is go on tour.
Mm-hmm.
We have built ourselves up a really cool, really successful summer house concert tour thing that we've been doing now for the last 8 years. Can't do it this year because of the pandemic, meaning that the thing that we do that earns us, you know, 75% of our yearly income is off the table. So we've been figuring out ways to pivot in this time to just remain viable as humans, you know, to stay living indoors, eating food, all those things we enjoy doing. And so, you know, one of these things is that we have scheduled ourselves the beginnings of a very robust virtual house concert tour. We have all but two dates scheduled in our first month.
It's great.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And then we only have scheduled 3 days off in there.
Right.
Like we have a like chock-a-block schedule of virtual Zoom concerts. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to not leave my house, sit on my couch, click on something and watch a private concert for me and my friends with Shannon and Jamie. Yeah, first of all, you're right. You do. It's going to be amazing. We've got some cool plans. If you want one of these for yourself, they're easy to host. Like I said, you don't have to leave your house. You don't have to get off your couch. You don't even have to put on pants as long as you can arrange your Zoom camera so we don't know. Right? That's kind of the key, really. You know?
No. Don't stand up. Don't stand up.
Oh, no. He stood up. yeah, it's easy to do, you know, and it would be an amazing thing to do with you and... your people. So if you want to do that, message one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the thing that we've been doing to sort of help ourselves through this time, hopefully, is we have launched a sustainability fundraiser.
And it's going so great. If you are a new supporter, it means that you've probably joined because of the sustainability fundraiser.
Yeah.
And thank you so, so much. Mm-hmm. We just receive a daily lift from seeing new supporters coming into this community. And like it's a tangible way in which you are literally going to support us to get through this time.
Yeah.
Not only to sustain our lives, you know, to like, you know, pay our bills and eat food, but also to sustain our work. You know, you're making it possible for us to continue doing the work that we do in this time. And it feels, I feel very, very grateful that you are enabling us to be able to continue to do that.
Yeah. And I want to lean also on the idea that, you know, as always, part of how we conceive our work is that there's a big component in it of helping other people.
Yes.
And the ultimate goal in this sustainability fundraiser that we're doing, first of all, what is a sustainability fundraiser? Great question. Mm-hmm. Instead of doing like a regular sort of Kickstarter-esque fundraiser like we do most years, where we're trying to raise a big pot of money one time to make physical goods, instead what we're doing is we're asking people to sign up for recurring monthly contributions. So, you know, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever. Most people do 10. Second most popular is 5. But they add up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what it is. We're working to, you know, hopefully set ourselves up with sort of a modest but predictable, reliable, stable foundation of monthly income to help sustain us through this time, hence the term sustainability fundraiser. When we reach our top goal of 150 supporters, we have this amazing thing planned where I am going to use the technical skills that I have in the recording studio, namely mixing records and mastering records, to help other artists who, like us, have been put out of work by this pandemic. They can't play live shows, they can't support themselves in the way they typically do and need to. I'll be able at that point to mix and master records for people in that situation for free so that they have something that they can then take and sell to their communities to engage them and hopefully generate income and hopefully help keep them going too. So, you know, by participating in this fundraiser with us, ultimately you're going to help us turn around and help other people with that. So that's a big deal to us. Yes.
And this is one of the goals that we've outlined for this fundraiser. Yeah. We've got a couple more and you can read all about them at shannoncurtis.net.
Yes.
The front page of my website is dedicated to this fundraiser right now. We actually met goal one just a few days ago, woo-hoo, which is very exciting. We're working toward goal two right now. And it involves making a record with our community called the, well,
referred to in
this time right now as the pandemic album, where it's not going to be the actual title, but we're going to work on making an album together with our collective stories and experiences from this time, documenting, you know, what we're all going through.
Yeah.
And then the third goal that Jamie just mentioned. So go to shannoncurtis.net and figure out which monthly level works for you if you've not yet contributed. Every little bit counts. And we're counting, by the way, our goals are not dollar-based. They're people-based. So goal one, we reached when we hit 50 supporters.
Yep.
Goal two is 100 supporters.
And guess what goal three is?
It's 150 supporters. So any amount that you can come in on really helps us get toward those goals. And thank you so much, those of you who have already participated and those who decide to do it now. We really, really appreciate you.
So much.
Another way that you can be supportive of this podcast is to go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating.
Oh, yeah.
And a review.
Yeah.
And that would be helpful.
Be like, 5 stars, Jamie and Shannon are awesome.
You could say something like that.
Yeah.
That's an example
of
what you could say.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that. And yes, welcome to today's podcast. Jamie, how are you feeling today?
Thanks for asking. You know, generally fine. I don't think I've had a good night's sleep in about a week, but none of them has been bad. I've just been doing this really interesting, weird sleep thing where like every night feels really different. Last night I slept so intensely that when I woke up for the first time, I was like, wow, it's gotta be like 10:30 or something. Looked at the clock. It was 7 minutes past 7,
mm-hmm,
you know? And I felt like I had slept, you know, 7 hours of time in 4 hours.
Right.
And then kind of, you know, hung out for a bit and then went back to sleep and had another little really intense burst. But then like woke up earlier than usual. It's just been strange. And that's been sort of characteristic of my last week. I haven't had like a routine sleep-wise, which has kind of made every day feel a little bit weird, a little bit different, not necessarily in a bad way. Just, I don't feel like I'm in a routine right now, if that makes sense.
It does.
I just feel a little bit adrift in that way. Not in a bad way. Just things are different.
Yeah.
But generally fine. You know, you and I have just been so busy. I really haven't had time to do a lot of real concentrated, focused worrying. You know?
That's probably for the best.
Haven't had time to get into a, you know, a 2-hour Twitter hole and end up feeling really bad about myself and the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably healthy and good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we talked last week in the podcast about conspiracy theories.
Right, because it was starting to bubble up as we were recording last week's podcast. A couple of different people in our lives were like floating these conspiracy theory ideas on social media and in personal emails to us and things too. And so we really kind of touched on it. But then since that recording, it sort of kind of blew up in the world.
Like,
and
Turns out everyone's family's doing this.
It turns out lots of people know people engaging in conspiracy theories right now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, what was your experience with that?
So it's interesting.
Last week's pod.
So after the podcast came out, like I think Wednesday, maybe last week, I put a little, you know, on Facebook, you can do those little tiny status updates that are so small that you can have a colorful background.
Yeah.
So they kind of pop.
Yep.
And I did one of those that just basically said, you know, we've had a lot of people in our world engaging with conspiracy theories this week. Any of y'all?
you?
And we talk about it in the podcast, you know? And like, it was one of those type of posts that has way more comments and reactions. Like, people feel a need to speak on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a like and move on. It's a don't even hit like, immediately start typing,
right,
you know?
Right.
And two interesting things. One, oh my gosh, so many people share being like, yep, me, yeah, me.
Yeah.
Everyone seems like they're having this experience, A.
Yeah.
And B, a whole other category of human that came to chime in on this thread was conspiracy theorists.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting to me because I wasn't even like saying anything that was like, it wasn't like I was naming a particular conspiracy theory and being like, check out this stupid thing, and people were jumping in to defend a pet thing. I was just saying in a general way.
Have you experienced this?
And these people, clearly the sort of people who are the people who do this behavior, felt compelled to jump on this thread. I don't know if it's a defensively,
maybe.
I'm wondering if so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's weird, right? Because it's hard to be defensive to something where you haven't been specifically called out. So like the dynamic is real strange. But something I was hearing from multiple humans on the thread was, well, if by engaging with conspiracy theories, you mean not trusting anything the mainstream media has to say.
Right.
I'm like, no, that's not what I meant. But tell me more.
Yeah.
Paging Dr. Freud.
Another thing that I remember reading a lot is if by engaging in conspiracy theories, you mean thinking for myself.
Yeah.
Which, no, that's not.
Indeed, quite the opposite.
They seemed like defensive comments, the ones that I read also. And I actually stopped reading after a while because it felt too stressful for me to engage in the deep dive.
Shannon and I both have posts like this where like, you know, Shannon will do a post and I'll engage with it to a point, and at a certain point, it's like, oh, this is your problem.
I can't. Well, no, and most of the time, honestly, the people who engage with this online, for the most part, are wonderful.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, even
the people who were doing the conspiracy theory type stuff on mine were doing so in a constructive and respectful way.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Not in an unkind way. I'm not certain I would call it constructive.
Well,
but
they were attempting it from their frame to be constructive.
Okay,
and
fair enough.
I honor that.
Sure.
I think it's fucked up,
okay,
but I honor it.
Got it. Okay. I feel you. But, but you're right. It was in kind tones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you make of that?
I've got no positive or helpful conclusions.
Yeah.
Other than, man, like, people, you got to get your act together.
Well, you know, the reason that we touched on it last week in the podcast was around the idea of like trying to understand the emotional, psychological state of a person who is engaging in cultivating these conspiracy theory ideas for themselves.
Yep.
And that really, you know, it comes from a place of being fearful and uncertain and needing to place give an answer to like this enormously fraught time that we're all living in.
It's trauma, like, response to uncertainty.
Yeah. And so, you know, to cultivate some compassion around that, and this, I guess this thread of yours was an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that remains at the forefront of my mind in terms of like how I feel like I need to communicate, you know, with people when confronted with an opportunity to do that. And also just how I'm thinking about folks, you know, as I'm processing it all.
Yeah.
One of our stars, Katie, shared a really great article.
Oh, so good.
And I am blanking right now on the name of the publication. It was just somebody's blog. And we can maybe dig it up and put it in the comments, perhaps, or in the text of the podcast.
Sure,
today.
I'll take a note on that.
It was really helpful. And we have a need as humans to assign meaning and order to things.
Sometimes, you know, unknowable things.
Well, and in a time when what we're all dealing with right now is unknowable, it's like it's an unknowable time. We don't know how this pandemic's going to end. We don't know how many lives it's going to take before it does.
We're still learning new things about how this virus acts in real time.
Exactly. I mean, I'm reading articles every day about things that doctors are finding new patterns in which the virus affects different patients in different ways. And so, yeah, it's really unknowable. And so, and the origins of it, you know, science seems to agree that that this kind of virus, you know, and this virus in particular emerged naturally,
animal to human transmission.
Yeah, and that's, you know, based on the genetic analysis of the virus itself. This is their best guess as to where it came from.
Yep.
But, you know, the fact that such an agent of chaos has been thrown into our world like this, it, for some people, it helps to make sense of this utter chaos, to be like, well, no, someone planned this.
To be able to assign motivation.
Yeah, yeah. And that there's a bad person in this story.
Yeah, someone you can blame.
Yeah.
Because when it's unblameable, when there's no one to blame and you just have to sit with it, it's, I think, for some people, a lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard for all of us. I mean, we're built for stories. We're built for good guys and bad guys.
Yeah, it's true. Know? And we're built like to learn, and we're curious animals, and we're built to find answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And but you combine that with a fundamental lack of understanding of how to be critical of media in some people, and it's a toxic brew.
There's a dangerous thing happening, I think. You know, and actually I have more to say about media a little bit later on in my notes for today's podcast, but it's a dangerous thing to just, you know, dangerous and frankly lazy thing to say, because there are some parts of the media that are irresponsible and that are outright manipulative and bad.
Yep. And all the major media outlets are owned by multimillionaires or billionaires who have their own agenda.
Right.
All this is true.
Fair point. But it's dangerous and lazy, I think, to then say, to take that bit of information and apply that to all media. And the whole media is bad and, you know, and can't be trusted. I mean, we need to look at media critically. We need to triangulate and figure out, use those critical thinking skills, you know, and look for primary sources. And, you know, yes, we do get our information mostly from media, but the people that we need to be listening to in this crisis are scientists and experts in public health.
Yeah.
And yes, a lot of times we're reading those people's viewpoints and research via the media.
Sure.
But these are not unknowable things.
No. You just have to dig a bit.
Yes. And to say that all media is bad and you can't trust any of the mainstream media is lazy and it's dangerous.
Yes.
So it's an interesting time.
It is. And you know, a friend of ours on this thread, another thread, maybe the same thread, just this is one of those threads that just keeps going and going and going. Someone else just commented on it an hour or so ago.
Yeah.
And she's like, the anti-media brainwashing that's happened in a certain segment of this country is remarkable. Mm-hmm. And it's really true.
Well, and it's adjacent to the anti-expert brainwashing.
Yes, it is.
Right? That we can't trust the experts, which is just ridiculous. I mean, when it comes to matters of epidemiology, virology, biology, science. No. You should not think for yourself.
No.
You should learn the facts that people have studied and have done replicatable experiments about to prove hypotheses over and over again in a peer-reviewed, rigorous fashion.
Yeah.
and then take that information and decide what you're going to personally do with it. But you don't get to make up your own ideas about how virology, epidemiology, biology, and science work.
No.
Unless you are an epidemiologist, a virologist, a biologist, or a scientist.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Specifically in those fields.
Yeah.
You know,
you kind of have to have an advanced degree in one of these specific fields to talk about this kind of thing.
Or
you can't just spout off ideas.
Or say you're an authority on such a thing.
Yeah.
That's,
sure.
So, yeah. let's get back to some science, folks. Let's.
it's funny, right? Like, this is not a new thing in this time. Like, there has been in America a uniquely American thing where we are resentful of people with education and we are distrustful of experts, or as these people will call them, quote unquote experts.
Right.
And it's
The elite.
Yeah. It's a uniquely American
the
phenomenon.
Intellectual elite.
It's really weird.
So I always think about, as I in talking about issues like this, my mind goes to what drives a person to be so anti-expert or anti-media? Like, what's the driver? What's the motivation?
Rugged American individualism?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not being snarky
either.
The idea that my opinion is as good as your knowledge.
No, I totally get that. And I think that's valid. But I'm thinking about, like, on a person by person basis.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people that I've heard use the words, you know, this isn't conspiracy theory. This is thinking for myself, or this is who I would not say about them, because I know them personally, that they're just dedicated to this rugged American individualism. That's not it. Yeah. It's something else. And my mind goes to, like, what's the motivation behind that? And it goes back to, I think it's easier for some people in a situation that they feel so scared about what is, and that maybe their trust has been violated in real ways.
Sure.
Right? By quote unquote experts, by people who should be trustworthy in the media to report on truth.
Yep.
Right? So you get burned once, twice, I don't know.
Yep.
You feel like you've been fooled.
Mm-hmm.
And you're scared to death of trusting anybody else in the future. And you find the places that are, I don't know, that feel safer, feel like more of a safe explanation to you. You know, and so I think it comes back to feeling vulnerable in a time of uncertainty.
Yeah, I think you're right about
that. You know, and I just want to encourage myself and everyone listening that, you know, building bridges of connection with those people is probably the most important thing that we can do.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to do that sometimes. I have to take several breaths and maybe minutes away from a conversation. Thank goodness that there's, like, you know, that asynchronous communication, you know, online.
Yeah.
Because I can take a few beats and settle down. Because when I see somebody posting something that's so outlandish, I have an emotional response. Yes, heart rate goes up. And I need to settle down, get some perspective.
Get past the fight or flight response.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Think about the human, where they're coming from.
And what their needs are.
And try to figure out how to make a connection, you know? Because, man, we got to come out on the other side of this with a better sense of our collective humanity. And if we make enemies along the way, it's going to be harder to do that.
I think you're right about that. And also, like, it's really tempting. I had one friend on my thread who was like, first time I see anyone post something like that I see on my timeline, I block them. And like, I understand that.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it's good to have a sense of like self-preservation and personal boundaries. And that's good.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think that this time requires a bit almost more selflessness or work or effort or something like that, you know, because when we block someone, what we do is we remove ourselves from their life as a potential cross-check or source of actual positive, healthy, good, verifiable information. Even in modeling that kind of behavior. Like, you don't have to push back on every single friend you see engaging in this.
Oh, gosh, no.
But you can, but just by virtue of being connected with them, you know, with the way that people see each other interact online. Mm-hmm. And I know that people see me interacting or, you know, lifting up science and data and actual knowledge and the idea that knowledge is findable and that the truth is out there if you are willing to dig for it and search for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have to think that, you know, I do that, you do that. We have other people who we respect who do that. You've got to imagine when people see us doing that, it's just lodges a little thing inside their brain that maybe just might help, if it happens enough times, to build a little wall that might interrupt some of that other bad neural stuff that's happening with them.
And I think you touched on this. each one of us has to make a decision for ourselves, what's best for ourselves to do too. You know, I definitely, there have been times in my life where it's been the most healthy thing for me to do to hide someone from my feed because it just causes me too much emotional stress.
Yeah, for sure.
To see the stuff that they're engaging in, you know.
And I will say, like, this post that I did last week that everyone commented on, like, man, I'm good for a couple weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I will not be posting anything that's going to engender that sort of discussion, at least for a hot minute. Mm-hmm. It got fatiguing.
Yeah, totally hear ya.
Yeah.
Totally hear ya.
How about you? How you feeling? What's on your mind?
Oh, boy. It's been a weird day, or a weird, like, last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Not quite 24 hours, but yeah. So, Jame, you mentioned earlier that we're doing our nightly broadcasts for the fundraiser, and at the very end of last night's broadcast, What became the end? Yeah. We used my phone for the camera and the interface for doing the broadcast, and so I can see if somebody texts me while we're doing the broadcast.
We should probably put on Do Not Disturb, but we're not that bright.
I guess not that bright, yeah. So I saw a text come through while we were on the broadcast that made me concerned for a loved one. And someone was relaying some information about someone being in the ER. And so we ended the broadcast so that we could go investigate what was going on.
And, like, prematurely and quickly.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, gotta go.
So if you saw us doing that, here's why. But, you know, it turned into what's been kind of just a roller coastery, painful opening of wounds in the last number of hours last day for me.
Yeah.
So the post was regarding I have a family member who has been estranged from me for a number of years now, for whom I have tremendous love and deep grief that they are not in my life at this time. And I don't know why they've estranged themselves from me.
Yeah.
And it's part of the grief of this, this has been for me over the years, is I have no explanation for this loss.
Yep.
And for the first couple of years into this period of time, I mean, it would keep me up at night, my brain just spinning on...
Oh, me too.
...on why, you know, this person didn't want to be in my life anymore, but, you know...
And also my life, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know, not returning phone calls or texts or emails, just a complete ghosting with no reason that I can come up with. And
certainly none given.
Yeah. And so it's been, that whole situation itself has been painful for me in my life. And the first couple of years were the most acutely painful, you know, where I was really actively grieving that loss. The last couple of years, you know, there are moments when, you know, significant dates pop up, birthdays, holidays, you know, things like that where it resurfaces and I kind of have to acknowledge that and process and, you know, check in with how I'm feeling and, you know, and move on. Well, this person was in the ER last night with COVID symptoms.
Yeah.
And I had heard from some mutual friends a few weeks ago that they were quarantining because of some symptoms, but, you know, not severe enough to be hospitalized. And so then the ER visit, you know, that was a potential escalation of the symptoms. And I was concerned. And, you know, on the health front, it turns out that they were sent home from the hospital last night with an inhaler and, you know...
Chest x-rays were clear. Everything seems stable.
So, like, on the emergency type front, it seems like things are okay. But what this has done for me personally is completely dredge up every bit of the grief.
Yeah.
Sorry. I can't talk about it without crying.
It's okay.
It's just, you dredged up every bit of the grief that I have experienced in this relationship over the last number of years. And, you know, it dawned on me that I'm probably not the only one for whom this time, I mean, the coronavirus thing that we're all dealing with, it's a big collective trauma that we're all coping with. I can't be the only one that has experienced a reignition of some other relationship pain.
Yeah, right.
Because of this particular thing we're all going through now, you know, like surely the stay at home stuff has been a source of making other parts of people's lives difficult.
Yeah, you know? Like a force multiplier.
Yeah. You know, for me in this particular situation, you know, to not be able to be there.
Yeah.
For somebody that I love.
Yeah.
To not be able to offer my words of encouragement and love, you know, yeah. And I'm so grateful that it seems like they're probably out of the woods, you know, mm-hmm. and this is not going to take their life,
yep.
you know, but imagine if it had, and this is a person who I love, who I didn't ever really get to heal with.
Yeah, right. I mean, imagine how many people are going to die in this time or have a family member die on them without having had a chance to make an amends they'd always planned on making or a reconciliation that they just assumed would be in the future,
right.
you know?
Right, yeah.
It's funny too, right? Because thinking about it, you would kind of think that like, I don't know, like if it were me and I had somebody, well, I was going to say if I had somebody who I was holding a weird grudge against, like first of all, I wouldn't because I'm sober. And that's not how sober people act, right?
That's not how you stay sober anyway. Yeah.
But let's just imagine that I weren't sober and that perhaps I was engaging in some emotionally unhealthy behavior. Like for example, holding a strange and unnamed resentment towards somebody, you know? Yeah. But like somebody close who, you know, you can only entertain that sort of behavior for so long, you know? And you don't want to carry it to the grave. That's sort of... I think pretty common knowledge, right?
Yeah.
The idea that you want to settle your books before you shuffle off.
Right.
And imagine that like just being in that position, all of a sudden realizing that like your tab was coming due and you had not like settled your accounts yet.
Mm-hmm.
That would be terrifying.
Yeah.
It was really strange to me in that regard that you didn't get outreach at all from this person or their family yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, maybe everyone kind of felt like, it's, you know, yeah, we're going to the ER to be safe, but it's not like an emergency, you know, maybe you can tell,
maybe.
Like maybe they weren't like drowning in their own fluids inside their lungs or like, you know, whatever,
right,
you know,
right.
Clearly they weren't. So,
I mean, you don't go to the ER unless you think something's wrong and you need help.
Yeah.
But still, yeah.
I don't know. It's, yeah, but yeah, it dredged it up for me too. And what always dredges up for me is just the unknowability and the frustration of, I like answers. I'm an, I am, part of me is a math, numbers, data, science person.
Yeah,
there are
totally.
other side of the brain parts of me too, you know. But there are definitely parts of my brain that that like things to not go unsolved.
Yeah.
Unsolved mysteries really frustrate me.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't sit well with them. I want answers.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this unsolved mystery going on, it's like a cold case at this point. You know what I mean? It's like a four and a half year old cold case and it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
It does. So thanks for listening to that. I felt like it was important to be open with y'all about what this part of my experience, because
yeah.
I'm sure I'm not the only one, you know, I've heard people, you know, talking about how the stay at home orders, have probably really exacerbated, situations in which people experience domestic violence.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
I mean, there's some numbers coming out around this yet. I want to say in London, it was something like tenfold increase in calls to domestic violence helpline.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just be good to each other. Be good to each other and gosh, make whatever amends you got to make with people. It is just not worth, leaving things untied.
Yeah.
It's just not.
And if you're in a bad situation, get the fuck out. You know what I mean?
Can, that's a complicated.
Yeah.
That's a complicated task.
Yeah, it can
for
be.
For a lot of people.
And also for some people, it's not. Also, for some people, the only complication is an emotional tie that they're having trouble getting
past.
Sometimes
that's the case.
You know,
yeah.
So if you're in a bad situation and you have the power to get out of it, just get out of it. Life is short.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah. Should we take a little break?
Would you like to?
I would. I could blow my nose.
Oh, yeah. Good. Let's do it.
Okay. Sounds good. We're going to be back in a short second half of the episode today.
Sounds good.
But we'll see you soon.
All right. Back in a sec. People.
My nasal passages are clear.
Yeah. Your voice sounds much less like you've been crying. You know, nothing wrong with crying, but I understand. You got to clear the nasal passage. It's very important.
Do it.
Yeah, you do.
Yes.
So what's our experience been this week?
We've been in fundraiser mode. That is a big part of our lives right now.
It's 2 hours a day that take up like 5 to 7 hours worth of energy.
Totally.
It's really true. Because we like, so we're doing it in sort of a variety show format, right?
Right.
And part of the way we're doing it this year is one of the fundraiser levels. Well, I mean, any fundraiser level 20 and above, 20 bucks a month and above that someone gives at, they get to pick a Shannon Curtis special request, which is they get to choose any song from your back catalog, which people is an extensive catalog, hundreds of songs going back to 2006, right? They can pick literally any song from that entire history, that last 15 years, and I will learn the piano. I'll learn it on piano. Mm-hmm. Shannon will refamiliarize herself with the words and the melody, and we'll perform it live as a duo the very next day. Meaning that, like, every single day, I have to learn between 2 and 4 songs on piano, and Shannon has to be like, "How did I sing this again? This song from 2008?"
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Totally.
So it's a ton of prep work, a ton of rehearsal, and then the show.
Yeah. It's also really fun though to relearn these songs, because like a lot of them we haven't had the opportunity to like do.
It's nice
in
for
years.
Me. It's nice for me to be getting my piano chops back up some too. You know what I mean? Like
totally.
I play keyboards on every single thing that I make, but it's always like it's synthesizer stuff or other textures, you know, organ or whatever. Just, you know, things I'm playing with one hand, or just like drones, or
it's
just like textural.
A different thing to accompany a singer and be the instrument that's backing a performance. Yep.
It's
totally.
Real fun.
Yeah, that's cool. And the fundraiser is going great. We've got 58 supporters as of the recording of this podcast today.
8 people on the way to goal 2.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So it's been really good. Thank you everybody who's participated.
If you haven't yet participated, please go to shannoncurtis.net and take care of that. Go ahead. Yeah. Push pause on the podcast. We'll wait.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing that.
The other thing that we achievement unlocked this week is that we have finished removing all of the patches of dandelions in our backyard.
Every single dandelion in our backyard is no longer there, and we have removed it personally by hand.
That's right.
Either Shannon or me. Roots and all. And then we went back personally by hand, filled every single dandelion root hole with topsoil, and then seeded all of it with clover.
Yes. It was a massive effort, and we still have the front yard to do. So, but I'm going to go ahead and celebrate the backyard achievement, because holy moly. And you might be thinking, they popped a few dandelions. No. There were like whole swaths of the yard that were like just patches of dandelion. You couldn't see any grass or anything. It was just dandelion on top of dandelion. Like, you couldn't even find the center of these things because they were overlapping each other.
Like 3 foot by 3 foot patch where it's all dandelions.
Gosh.
I mean, there's like 112 dandelions in that area.
It's like a tiny area. Yes. Yeah. We filled so many garden bins that have been taken away by the city.
I mean,
with just dandelions.
We've literally probably removed something along the lines of 3/4 of a ton of dandelions.
It's probably true.
Seriously. Like, we had garden bins that were so full. They're dense and they're heavy.
Yeah.
When you have a compost bin, like one of the big bins that's full of dandelions, it's almost impossible to move. It's got to be 300, 350 pounds.
Ridiculous.
And we've done that for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's just wild. We had to borrow a neighbor's bin last week.
High five for finishing the backyard dandelion effort.
And we've already done as much as 20% of the front yard also.
It's true.
We did a lot of the green belt.
I feel daunted about what's left, but hey, one thing at a time.
One thing at a time.
Small victories.
Yeah.
We've also been continuing to work on this record that we're putting out in June. And it's every time we pull up a new song and work through it, I get really excited to share this with you.
Yeah, me too.
We're on a bit of a delayed schedule this year because, because Jester's Broadly at the events of the world. Honestly,
we're doing the best we goddamn can.
There were
people.
Several weeks in there where work just halted completely on the record, because just emotionally speaking, we were trying to get our brains around what do we do with our lives and our work. Like, it was
emotionally and practically. I mean, there was the trauma of this new, we had to sort of deal with and assimilate into our lives. Weird thing about this era we're all in, how good we've all had to become at assimilating traumas, right? It's not the first time, so it felt familiar, if unwelcome. But then we also just had to, functionally speaking, reinvent our entire business model. And that just took record-making time away.
Yeah. So we were a little bit delayed on finishing, but that's okay. We don't have a tour to go on where we have a deadline for needing CDs in hand. But we are going to release the record on June 19th. Yeah. That is happening.
Yes. We'll for sure have at least the digital files done by then.
Yes.
We'll get CDs when we get them. And you'll love it.
That's right. you're gonna eat that CD and you're gonna love it.
Yeah, and you're gonna sit here until you're done. And if you don't finish it today, you're having it for breakfast tomorrow. Anyone else have an authoritarian dinner, mom? Raise your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yep. Totally. I have found I've been really in this time reevaluating some of my media consumption habits. Also, this is something, and I put this on our list to talk about in the podcast today. There's a newsletter that I get.
I get it too.
Called Documental, and it's a woman that we met at a house concert last year who puts this newsletter out, and she's sort of tackling this idea of developing herd immunity to depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And the way in which she's tackling these ideas, it's really interesting.
We should interject here that her newsletter is called Docu-Mental. Mm-hmm. And it's very purposely about mental wellness in this time.
And not specifically to the pandemic, just in general.
That's
in American society.
Yep.
It's a specific to American culture and politics and all that kind of stuff. She's been on fire this week. I know you have some catching up to do on her newsletter, but I posted one of them to my Facebook page the other day because I'm like, amen, applause, you know, standing ovation for Whitney's writing last week. But she had another one today that was also really challenging. And I was doing some reflecting about it in terms of like my own media habits during the pandemic specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in her newsletter today, she talked about the notion that, and we talked earlier in this podcast about like the mainstream media and like and how to responsibly consume media.
Yeah.
And the notion that all the major media organizations are for-profit companies and like they're interested in keeping your eyeballs on them, right? That is how they make money. Yeah.
Clicks and ad placements.
Yeah. And in terms of like TV news, you know, that's it, they want your eyeballs watching those stories. And she made this really important distinction that, you know, the media don't exist first and foremost to inform.
No.
That's not their purpose. Their purpose is to engage you in a story, to hook you and keep you there.
Yep.
But she talked also about in today's newsletter about how we form our own stories around the information that we consume like that, you know. And that humans are built for story. Like we dig stories. Yeah. Like that's part of how human, like that's part of our like anthropological history as a species.
Yeah, right.
You know, we formed around stories and telling stories to one another. And the idea of, you know, watching stories on the news, you know, their goal is to keep you tuned in, to give you whatever dopamine hit you need to scratch that story itch. And good stories have good guys and bad guys, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of what we consume when we're watching TV stories, they're not necessarily accurate portrayals of what's going on. You know, like she mentioned, Whitney in her newsletter today actually mentioned even movies that are based on historical events, say at the beginning of the film, based on historical events.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like this is an accurate scene-by-scene description of an historical event. No, no, no. It's based on it, and it's totally amped up to amplify the story part of it, to amplify the good versus evil, the good versus bad, you know, like because that's what we latch onto. And I thought it was really interesting just in terms of like thinking about how I engage with media. We don't watch TV news like at all.
We don't have a TV?
We don't have TV. I think Rachel Maddow is very smart. And occasionally I will pull up one of her clips just to see what she has to say on, you know, a topic. But, you know, we haven't engaged in TV news in a long time. But even in my media consumption in terms of what I read, you know, I've got to be really careful about what I'm engaging in. And am I reading this in order to make myself feel good because it's a feel good story hit, not a feel good story, but you know what I mean? Like where I'm like rooting for one side and against another.
Yeah.
if that's what the thing is that I'm consuming is doing to me, it's not probably actually informing me.
No.
You know, and
it's probably reinforcing a bias.
It's probably reinforcing a bias. Yeah. So I just wanted to, I'm sort of issuing myself a challenge, even though I don't watch TV news, is that part of it's not a challenge to me. But in just in terms of like how, what, like when I pull up my phone and I open Twitter, what am I doing that for? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to ask myself the question, why am I doing this? Am I looking for information? Or am I feeling a need for some sort of stimulation about this good versus evil story that I've, you know, that's continuing in my mind?
Yeah.
You know, and if it's the latter, I probably shouldn't be doing that. So like, I'm going to issue myself the challenge to really check in before gobbling up whatever media like that. And I'm going to issue a challenge to those of you who are listening, like maybe stop watching news for a little while and see what that does to you. Or observe maybe how...
And when you say news, I think you're also referring to like opinion programs.
Oh, of course.
The Hannitys and Maddows and whatnot.
For sure. Like never watch Hannity, but yeah. Still, yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I wonder if you changed up your media habits and I wonder what you would observe, how you would observe a change in your life, in your emotions.
Like there are ways to get news without watching news.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are ways to get information.
Right. And I acknowledge that there are some, that even though I don't watch news on TV, that same itch can be scratched. Mm-hmm. That same story dopamine itch can be scratched by scrolling Twitter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a challenge for everybody, whether you watch it on TV or not. Just, you know, maybe ask some questions about how you're gobbling stuff.
Yeah.
Or stop gobbling and see what it does to you.
Here's the deal, people. It's time for basic media literacy again in this country. You know, I think we have lost any kind of herd immunity we might, if we ever even had any, against bad ideas perpetuated, foisted upon us by bad actors.
We have to be vigilant like never before.
Yeah.
Right now.
That's really true.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that media is in a tailspin economically really is just... It's a huge force multiplier for the situation, right? Because the only thing that's going to keep the media alive, those aspects of it that do survive this time, it's going to be the ones that have the most successful stories, that get clicked on the most, and that sell the most ads, right? Mm-hmm. Which necessarily means that the bias, the survival bias of every single media outlet out there, except the ones that are owned by billionaires, is toward clickbait.
Right.
And they'll just put whatever the hell up a lot of the time, you know? And you can see this even in like formerly really well trusted entities.
Right.
You'll see them just put something up and like, then you'll have to walk it back. The New York Times, the New York frickin' Times.
Yeah.
Remember when we were kids and like, if it was in the New York Times, you could trust it. You might not like it, but you could trust it.
This is
we thought.
Yeah. It's interesting that you're like, I'm listening to your language right now. Mm-hmm. And like, if we like rewind to the first part of this podcast where we're talking about how so many people mistrust the mainstream media. I mean, like the words you're saying right now influence that kind of thinking. It's not that they are not to be trusted wholesale.
True.
Right? Like,
but man, you have to publish enough, you know, hat in hand corrections 5 hours after an article. And always, by the way, it's on the editorial side. And I want to be really clear about that. Like with the Times, right? Like the reporters, they have some of the best reporters in the world working for them.
Uh-huh.
And if you follow the reporters themselves on Twitter and get a sense of how those people are seeing things and what they're seeing in real time, that can be really informative and helpful because it's not mediated by an editor, right? There's two sides in a newsroom. There's the reportorial side, and that's where the reporters work. And then there's editorial. And editorial is controlled by the CEO in the boardroom, right? That's who they report to. So you can have a story that's been reported out super well, and then editorial puts a completely misleading headline on it and reorganizes things and edits stuff out to completely change like the thrust of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times in specific has been called out on this a whole lot because a lot of people only ever see headlines, right?
Yeah.
And so like if you have the same story, you could put headline A, headline B. They could make it look as though it was two opposite things that happened. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this has been happening so much specifically with this outlet because they have a huge editorial problem because like their board is controlled by a whole bunch of people who I think have their own agenda, which is really different than like what a journalistic agenda should be, which is to accurately, clearly frame the situation as honestly as possible. Mm-hmm.
So as a consumer, what do you do about that? Because everything that you just said in the last 2 minutes fuels the kind of fire that we talked about earlier in the episode where people were like, you can't trust the media. What you just said, I could take away from what you just said. Well, if I can't trust the New York Times,
who can I trust?
Then what?
Well, then what you do is you read other sources. You go look for it on NPR. You go look for it in The Guardian to see what, go look for it in the Japan Times. Get a sense of what the international perspective is. Mm-hmm. Like, look it up in the Financial Times. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of journalistic outlets. Like, cross-check the Times against the Post, against the Seattle Times, against the LA Times, right? They will all, four of them, have a different local editorial team that is, you know, if there's going to be a spin put on it or not, that's where it'll happen. And if you read this a story in one place and you, and then see it being recanted all the time, like I have mentioned with the New York Times, you know, you might get the sense that media is untrustworthy. But if you just get in a habit of following a number of different news sources, like I get, what, 4 or 5 different newspapers' emails every single day and night, right? I get their morning email and their nightly email. And if I just were getting one of them, maybe I wouldn't feel like I was getting the straight dope.
Right.
But you read multiple sources from different points of view, and you see where the commonalities and the differences are, and you can figure it out. You start seeing the patterns, right? Like, okay, the New York Times is going to skew a little bit contrary on this kind of thing, you know?
That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, well, it is. Being media literate is some work, and you need to do it.
I know. But it's also, frankly, a lot of people don't have the time to do that.
Yep.
So I'm not sure what the answer is. Listen to more podcasts.
Yeah. No, well, it's hard, right? Because like the answer should be find a source you trust and go with it. But then what you get with that is confirmation bias.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Because
you look for a source that has stuff that makes you feel the way you like to feel when you read news. And then if you only read that, then you're just getting their editorial spin on things, right? And so that's the hard truth of this is that like even if you're only reading headlines, read headlines from the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Financial Times and the Guardian.
Yeah.
Even if you don't read the articles at all,
right,
at least just see what's the top line spin being put on the situation.
Sure.
You can start to get a sense of where the biases lie. And like if people are, if these things are sorting out into predictable, like this says it this way, this says it's this way over time for a certain type of issue, you can start to figure out where in between there the truth probably lies.
Right.
And then if you want to drill down and read actual articles, you know, you can do that. But even just checking headlines from multiple sources, you know? And the other thing you can do is really like be aware of the type of media source that you're consulting. I don't know if anyone here knows any media theory, but there was this guy,
media theorist?
Media theorist, if you will. Yeah, a scholar. His name is Marshall McLuhan. And he had this really sort of groundbreaking theory in the late 60s into the 70s that can be condensed to the idea that, quote, the medium is the message, right?
Meaning so, what?
Meaning that where you see something tells you as much about what you're learning from it as the things that they're saying.
Okay.
So for example, you, like if you listen to the same story on, or you pick up the same story on, let's say, a newspaper versus the radio versus television, right? He assigned like a hot to cold, right? Like newspaper is a cool medium. It doesn't generate a lot of heat, you know? Like you have to actively be the one engaging with it.
Right.
You're the one bringing more energy to the situation.
Yes.
It's just sort of a staid presentation of facts, you know? And this is when you're reading an actual printed thing on actual paper, not when you're reading it online, all the ads are zooming at you and everything's flashing and moving all the time with video, right? TV is a hot medium, right? Meaning that the very essence of a story when it's presented on TV is going to be more dramatic and more high energy,
right?
Because that's what the that's what the medium itself is bringing to the conversation,
right?
And so, like, just the very act of choosing how you consume news, like if you consume everything on a nightly news program, like first of all, if you consume everything on like talk programs, like the, you know,
the opinion
stuff, the Hannity's, the Maddow's, the Frontline, the whatever it is, you know.
I hate to even use those names in the same sentence because they're so very different.
They're so very different.
Carry on.
Yep.
Yeah.
The opinion shows, those are the hottest possible, you know, everyone's amped up and talking fast and people are frequently yelling at each other. And, you know, it's a very heated, it's a hot thing. Like you can feel your blood pressure rise and you're physiologically going to have a different interaction with whatever's being discussed than if you watch it on the nightly news, where it's still TV, but at least it's a sort of relatively boring presentation of it. It's someone reading news into a camera, right? Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go down, radio is less hot than that. And then way at the bottom end is the print stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Daily print is a hotter medium than monthly print, you know?
Oh,
there's just no drama. There's not that sort of feeling like you're engaging with something in real time when you're reading, mm-hmm. say, Vanity Fair. They do wonderful, like, expose, like, deep dive,
long form
reported stuff, you mm-hmm. know? They've got amazing reporters working for them. But, like, the print edition comes out once a month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing that you can do, you know, circling back to your question, what mm-hmm. can people do in this yeah. time to, like, help themselves be better media consumers?
Cool it down.
Cool it down.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. You know, read things that are printed on paper. Or if you're reading in the iPad, click the thing up top where you get the screen reader view, where it just shows you text. Like usually in the bar, like up top
oh, yeah.
on the phone or on the iPad or the Kindle or whatever it is, like where it says like the URL, say that you're reading something on like nytimes.com/whatever, there'll be a little thing that looks like some lines of like text or whatever.
Yeah.
If you click that, it'll show you the quote unquote screen reader view, which is just text.
No ads.
And it strips out all the ads and makes it a lot more like reading a paper. So you're not getting that agitating stimulus that makes you have a
yeah.
more dramatic physiological reaction to the thing you're reading. It calms it down. It takes that temperature down.
All right, everybody. The challenge is to all of us. Let's cool it down.
Let's cool it down.
Yeah, let's do that. If you do it, if you take the challenge, I want to hear in our Misfit Stars group what that feels like to you.
Yeah.
Was it easy to do? Was it hard to do? Did you enjoy doing it? Is the worst thing you ever did? I want to hear what your experience is.
Yeah.
And this is the Misfit Stars private Facebook group. By the way, when you become a supporting member of Misfit Stars or you join our fundraiser effort that we're doing right now, you get invited to the Misfit Stars private Facebook group,
which is the best
group ever. It's the internet without the a-holes. And it's wonderful. So if you're not yet a supporting member, please consider becoming one. Right now, during our fundraiser period, you go to shannoncurtis.net and
yep.
pick your monthly support level.
It's just right on the front page there.
And thank you so very much for doing that.
What we ask people to do is just think of the amount of money per month where if it were to disappear from your bank account at the first of the month, you wouldn't know it was gone, right? A completely frictionless, stress-free amount of money. For some people, that's going to be, you know, someone just a couple hours ago did $31 a month. Mm-hmm. We have like a buck a day thing, but it's $31 a month. And like, that's great. They won't miss that. Wonderful. We'll make good use of that. That's
yeah.
a huge help to us. For a lot of people, it's just $5 a month. The important thing is that we're trying to aggregate a broad base of humans supporting us.
Yeah.
We're not counting money in this fundraiser. If you go to the front page at shannoncurtis.net and look how we have it set up, you'll note that we're not even tracking dollars raised.
Nope.
That's totally not the point in our minds. The point is that we feel that if we can get a whole bunch of people sending us their energy, their love, their support in this time, mm-hmm. their well wishes, their desires for us to make it through this,
yeah.
that the money's going to work itself out.
Yeah.
We really feel that way. So please, if you're not yet a supporting member of our fundraiser, now would be a great time to do it. Just go to shannoncurtis.net, pick a monthly level that works for you, and we'll be super grateful. We'll add you immediately to the, we'll invite you to the Facebook group,
yeah.
and you can accept or not accept that invitation at your whim. Donations, $10 a month and up, you'll get your name in the CD.
That's right.
As a thank
Special
you.
Special thanks.
$20 and up, you get your name in the CD as an executive producer.
No
so
big
if you,
deal.
If you've ever had Hollywood dreams, this is a great way to get those out. if you do $10 a month or more on the next live broadcast, you can sign on and join us there, and I will do what's called Jamie-oki
oh,
for
heck
you.
Yeah.
That's where you pick a song from the 80s, you type it into the comments on the video, and assuming I know the melody well enough to sing it, I'll look up the lyrics online and I will belt with great fervor and passion.
Passionately. Yes.
Oh yeah. One verse, one chorus, extreme enthusiasm. You'll love it. If you do $20 a month or more, you can pick a Shannon Curtis special request which is where we do that thing we talked about earlier, where we learn one of Shannon's songs, any song from her catalog that you like, and we'll play it for you on the next night's live broadcast, because I have to have time to learn the piano part.
Speaking of which, we should probably skedaddle from this podcast, as we've got some songs to learn for tonight's live broadcast. But you all, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for giving us your time.
Thanks for the good conversation, sweetie.
Yeah, same.
Thanks for opening up about where you're at.
Yes.
I'm sure it will have helped someone.
I hope so. That's the point in sharing ourselves, right?
Speak up in the private group, people. If anything that we talked about on the podcast today resonated with you, let us know. We'd love to talk with you about it.
Thank you all so much. We will be back again next week with more. And until then, take good care of yourselves.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.